Assalamu alaikum and peace. Welcome to this episode of Misconceptions. I'm your host, Muhammad Hashim, and here in the studio we have Yusuf Esther. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
We also have with us in the studio our audience. Assalamu alaikum. Inshallah, in this episode we'll be dealing with the misconceptions to do with conversion and the converts and who enter Islam. And a lot of people ask, why do these people actually enter Islam? For what reason? So how can we begin our conversation today, Sheikh?
Immediately we'll look at the word convert and say, why are they converting from whatever they have into Islam? And this is something that we've heard mentioned not just today, but throughout the history of Islam itself, people trying to give a reason why people go to Islam. Those who choose not to be Muslim, those who choose not to believe in the logical conclusion, there really is a God. Even scientists today admit there's something of intelligent design. So with that in mind, why would anybody deny the logical? And then when they see their own relatives and friends going into Islam, if they didn't go, they've got to come up with some kind of reason or excuse to say that, oh, they just went for this or that. And with that idea, I thought we'd turn to the studio audience and get some input. What are some of the things, misconceptions maybe you've heard that people have asked about?
Yeah, some people say that Islam is spread by the sword. Is that true?
That's a very common one. Throughout the whole of history, we always hear that Islam is violent and barbaric and we force people to be Muslims by the sword, I guess. What can we say about that?
Let's consider the word itself, sword. And think about the fact that in Arabic language, there are many words for sword. The saif, that's the most common one, saif. Another one is husam. Another one is muhannid. And the list goes on. I think somebody told me there was like 15 or 16 different kinds of swords that would be mentioned in a conversation if you're going to be talking about that kind of conversion, you know, forcing people. And when we look to the Quran itself and examine it closely and then compare it to what we find from the Old Testament and the New Testament of the Bible, we find that the word S-W-O-R-D, just the word sword alone, appears more than 200 times. Even words supposedly, according to them, coming from the mouth of Jesus saying, "Do not think I came with peace. I did not come with peace, but rather I came with a sword." They say Jesus said that. We don't have that in our teaching about Jesus. But then they also have in their book mentioning that Jesus is telling them, whoever has a coat, sell it and buy a sword. And then another passage in their book saying that they're having an altercation at Gethsemane. And a sword is flying around out here. There's, you know, fighting going on. And one of the people gets his ear cut off. So I think if somebody wants to talk about Islam being spread by the sword, we should compare it and see how much more aggressive maybe we would be than what we've heard here from the other books. When we look to the Quran, we look through all 604 pages, and we find what? Not a single word of any of the meanings of sword is in the Quran. Not one.
Not one.
Not one. So, now in a translation, somebody added a word sword in one of the verses talking about the one who was a disbeliever who killed a camel and said he pulled his sword out, but didn't say that in Arabic. But this is a translation anyway. So if you realize that there's no word sword, now we need to look and see exactly what does the Quran tell us about people coming into Islam. It tells us about calling people to Islam in a way that's better. It tells us to use wisdom even when we're calling people to Islam. It gives us instruction how to deal with people in a better way, a kind way, and a concise way to get a true message across. One of the most important things that I found, formerly coming from a missionary concept that I had of Christianity, is that Islam forbids the idea of lying to get people into your religion. You can't not just say whatever you want to say or give a meaning to something. This is clear from the Quran, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, attaqullah, fear Allah, as he should be feared, of course, and then Wakulu kaulan siddhita. And always you have to say the truth. If you understand this, you cannot be a believer and lie. And this is not just in one verse, it's throughout the entire Quran, again and again and again, talking about liars, 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 and they are going to hell.
It wouldn't make sense to bring someone to something like supposedly good with a lie, would it?
You can't force anybody to Islam anyway. Two reasons. One, the Quran says, La ikraha fi din. There's no compulsion to come into the way of Islam. There's no compulsion, no forcing. If they do, it's not Islam anymore. Why? The word itself, and this is the second point, the word itself, Islam, does not translate to English, as we mentioned in other programs, because of the depth of meaning. It takes a compound series of words to really say Islam. From aslama, the verb. Aslama, look at this, is surrender, okay, submission, obedience, but not to the humans, not to creation, but to God, the Creator. But look at this word. Sincerity.
Sorry.
How do you force somebody to be sincere? Tell me. And that's totally impossible. And then, of course, the word peace is there, but only if you have the other four words. So immediately, brother, you can tell the people it's impossible to have a forced conversion to Islam. Do you have a question, brother? Anybody?
Yes, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Did they enter Islam for money or marriage?
They enter Islam for money or marriage.
I've heard that before, where people enter Islam for a benefit, whether they're going to get a certain amount of money or they're just going to get married to someone.
Yeah. I actually have seen people talk like that and say, well, the only reason he came into Islam is because he knew that the girl couldn't marry a non-Muslim.
Yep.
So he said, I'll be a Muslim so I can get married.
Just get married to her.
Yeah, or if somebody did it to better their financial condition. In this case, then it would not be what? Sincere.
It wouldn't be accepted at all, would it?
Yeah, that's part of the word, though, sincere. How can you be sincere for Allah if you didn't do it for Allah? Yeah. So it would negate it. You could look like a Muslim, you know, buy a Muslim costume and walk down the street with a turban on your head, buy a Santa Claus beard, put it on and go, MashaAllah, Alhamdulillah, to everybody you see, Assalamu alaikum, you know, and pretend, but the heart wouldn't be there. The key to be a real Muslim is the heart. Now, it does require a follow-up, as we mentioned in other programs. You have to have beliefs and actions, but it starts with the heart. You can't get the heart right, then just stop and wait and don't move, because it's not Islam. What about another question?
Yes, I have a question, Sheikh Yusuf. Some people say that others who entered in Islam because they are crazy.
Crazy?
Yeah.
I've heard...
Guess what? You know what? That happened to me. That happened to me. Some people said, well, he must be crazy. Why would he go when he has all of this? We used to have Estes music company, the Estes pianos, Estes. So here we have this really a musical empire going. I come into Islam. Not only did I go to Islam, but also I went in and gave up everything in the music industry.
He must be crazy.
Must be crazy. That's exactly what they said. Now, on the other hand, look at this. When Cat Stevens entered into Islam and became Yusuf Islam, they said, oh, maybe he was on drugs.
Yeah.
They said that. They said he must have been on drugs.
Yeah.
They knew about him being in the hospital. You know, he had TB or something like this. And so they started trying to spread rumors like that. Oh, he's a drug addict. That's why, you know. And now, what about another one? Cassius Clay. Cassius Clay, the famous boxer,
Muhammad Ali.
He became Muhammad Ali, right? Mm-hmm. You know what they said about him? Too many shots to the head.
Yeah.
He went crazy. Exactly what you're saying. Mm. But by the way, none of that would have counted as Islam anyway, because you have to know what you're doing to accept Islam. If you don't have presence of mind, it doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
It really doesn't.
I guess people are just surprised how you can just kind of change your whole lifestyle and live a more simple life or a different life.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea of being a convert, though, is really misunderstood in a number of ways. Because the word itself...
Sorry, just while we're saying that, is it convert or revert? I've also heard revert.
You're reading my mind. I was going to that. I love that when you know, you're thinking something, somebody else say the same thing. That's exactly where I was going. The idea of a revert. You've heard people say that, right? Revert? Well, why revert? Because revert means to go back to something you had before, you know. And Islam is teaching us that every single child is already born in the condition of Islam.
The condition Arabic, of submission. They're born to submit.
Yeah. They say fitra. Did I say it right?
Yeah,
fitra. The fitra of Islam. It means that when a child's born, they're innocent. Now, this is common sense. Even if a lawyer is pleading your case in court, he'll say, my client is as innocent as a newborn
baby.
Mm. Wouldn't they say that?
Yeah.
So this is so innocent as a what? Now, in some other religions, they say that the baby starts out born in sin, taking the sin of the parents, carrying forward sin that started with Adam, things like this. We don't have that. We have that each one is completely clean and free from each other's sins. Whatever the parent did does not get passed on to the child. And also, whatever that child does doesn't pass on to brothers and sisters or to the parents. Each is independent from the other's actions because you and I are each accountable for what we do. Unless we come up with something and teach other people to do it, then we would get punished for that because that's also from us. Yeah. But there isn't anything about being born in sin. It's actually being born in such a state of innocence. It's called Islam itself, which is surrender to Almighty God, submission to His terms and conditions, obedience completely as much as a baby could, and then being sincere. Nothing's more sincere than a baby either. They're very straightforward. You never saw a baby try to pull something on you, right? They just real clear when they want something, they cry. When they're happy, they smile. You know, it's real simple.
Yeah.
And this is the status of a true Muslim in the heart. So we're seeing that a child starts that way. Now, when you come into Islam, it's to come back to this innocence, to come back to the shyness of the small child, to come back to this idea of knowing, real simple, right from wrong. Children know innately, that's wrong, this is right. And they catch the concept, yes, no. Yes, no. Along the way, though, they begin to learn from adults and other people these different ways of beginning to manipulate the truth. For instance, you take you tell a child, tell the truth, always say the truth. But then all of a sudden the phone call comes and the father's going, tell him I'm not here. Tell him I'm not. Now the child's going, but you're here. That my dad's here, but he's telling me to tell you not. No, 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 no.
So that might work.
Exactly. So Prophet Muhammad said, peace be upon him, every child is born on the natural inclination of Islam, but the parents will raise them up to become something different, Jew, Christian, fire worshiper, whatever.
On that note, Sheikh, we're going to take a quick break. You're watching Misconceptions with me, Muhammad Hashim, and of course, Yusuf Estes. Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back. You're here watching Misconceptions with me, Muhammad Hashim, and of course, Yusuf Estes. Before the break, we're talking about the many misconceptions about people entering Islam.
Yeah.
Let's talk about once you become a Muslim, what are the many misconceptions of reverts entering Islam then?
Oh, yes, that's a very good idea. To talk about misconceptions, having been in something else and coming to Islam, I can tell you that I had a lot of misperceptions and misconceptions about what it would be to be a Muslim. And also, what would be the condition of my relationship to the new Muslims. It was actually a bit overwhelming from time to time, and I wasn't really sure what I got into. But let's now turn it again to our audience and take some questions. Who has the next question?
Yes, Sheikh, I have a question.
Please.
How about the problems that are facing new Muslims in Islam, like fasting, hijab, circumcision? How do they perceive it?
Whoa. I think entering into Islam, especially at an older age, well, circumcision would be a problem and all the other stuff that goes along with it. How would they deal with it, or how are they dealing with it?
Well, first of all, let's find out what is an obligation in Islam, because sometimes things are put off on you right away when you come into Islam. It's a bit overwhelming that some of the Muslims who are born into Islam expect you to be able to understand and do right away. Like, for instance, I remember somebody handing me a Quran and wanting me to sit and read. And I looked, opened it up and I said, where's the words? Look at this. What is this? It looks like scribbling or something. I had no idea what I was looking at. And they said, well, you know, just take your time and read it. I said, read what? I can't understand what I'm looking at.
Did I just explain?
They said, well, one thing, you got the book upside down. Another thing, you open it from the other side. I'm going, no, 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 come on. Other misconceptions that we have when we get into Islam as being reverts, if you will, which we mentioned in the first part of the program, is that the hijab for the women. Because as soon as she gets into Islam, you've got brothers out here ready to cover her up, look like a black crow walking down the street. Now, here's a girl that's coming away from halter tops, you know, and short skirts and things like this, and just walking around all that. Now, all of a sudden, you're saying, you're a Muslim now, and we're going to put about 20 pounds of wool all over you, and you're going to walk down the street in Chicago or California somewhere, and it's more than they can bear. You might scare somebody away before they ever get started. So what we like to do is let each person come in according to their own understanding and ability. The most important thing was to get to Islam, to understand there really is only one God, and that you want to do what He wants you to do, and Muhammad's the messenger, and we're going to follow what He says. But we're going to do it according to our ability to accept it and deal with it. Now, if they want to deny those things, being part of Islam, that's the problem in belief. That doesn't work. But if they said, yeah, I believe it, but I'm just not ready for that yet, then we're going to be patient with them and help them in any way we can. We like to help the ladies, for instance, by having different alternatives in colors of their clothing and fabric that they might like to choose. Also, considering where they live, you know, like in some countries, it's even illegal for a woman to cover her face or cover her hair or even wear hijab altogether. So we want to consider what their background is and what they can deal with. But if they're able to handle it right away, again, we'll tell them, take it step by step. If she said, well, I just want to do everything all at once and go straight from a bikini into burqa, you'd be like, hold on, take it easy, because once you start, Islam is not really set up for you to back up. It's no reverse gear. So okay. Go in slow, take your time. Now, when you come to the subject of circumcision, definitely this is something you could scare somebody away from Islam in a hurry. As soon as you whip out the knife and you say, okay, guess what?
Oh, you're listening now, come on.
Another problem is female circumcision. This is not Islam. This is nothing in Islam telling us to do this to women. And this is something coming from cultures, and especially like places like Africa and so on, where they did that from idolatry and paganism. So how do we handle that? Understand from the beginning, it is a sunnah, something that if you do it, there's a big reward. But there's nothing Islam said if a man didn't do it, he can't be a Muslim anymore. There's nothing Islam says if a man doesn't do that, he's not a Muslim.
I mean, that's a very important point, because not many people
know
that.
So if he can't do it, if there's some problem, then okay. But if he says, I wish I could do it, but if I do it, I have diabetes, for instance, or something, and this would cause a serious problem or might open up an opportunity for serious sickness or death. Okay, in this case, take it easy. Nothing in Islam is telling you to hurt yourself. But if it's not a difficulty, we can understand what's going on with that and arrange for that, they should do it.
So there's nothing to fear when a new revert is entering Islam.
There's not supposed to be.
Not supposed.
I say that because there are other things that could come up, the misconceptions that Muslims themselves have about a revert and what you're supposed to do or treat them.
The expectations.
What you are supposed to do is treat them. Treat them good. Mm. Take them to eat. Take them out to share and learn about Islam, to help them buy books, help them get the proper clothing that they'd like to have, show them how to pray, spend time with them, teaching them how to pronounce words, helping them to feel good about being a Muslim. But not going overboard and saying, okay, brother, you have a picture on your wall, you know, of a bird or something. That's got to come off or you're not a Muslim anymore. Okay, take it easy, you know. And especially if you live in a house with other relatives who are not Muslim, you know. And, oh, you have a TV set. Oh, brother, we have to throw the TV set away. Now, by the way, because this is a TV show, obviously I'm going to be in favor of the TV. But only for our program.
Only for this program. Yeah.
But I think it's important also to take another question at this stage. What do you have, brother?
Yes, I have a question. What about if they want to leave Islam?
What if they want to leave Islam?
Yes, like killing them.
Yeah. If they want to go out of
Once
Islam.
Once they get into Islam and then they decide it's not for me, I want to kind of
We've
back
talked
out.
About it in some of our other programs.
We have.
The word is murtid. If somebody becomes murtid, goes out of Islam, what do? Immediately, this is where the media, the politicians, and the attackers against Islam, other religions, come and say, look, these guys are going to kill you. If you get in, they're going to take a knife and cut you one way. If you go out, they're going to get a knife and cut you another way.
Does that scare a lot of people for not entering in the first place?
I don't think it scares anybody, really, who's serious about it. I think it would be a concern, as it was for me. Because I was told that if you go into Islam and then leave, the penalty is death. That's what I was told. And I said, well, okay, let me keep thinking about that for a while. Then I came to understand something on another level. This is not what it sounds like. If a person doesn't want to be a Muslim anymore, they're not. The instant somebody doesn't want to be a Muslim, they're not. Why? Because the sincerity ended. The minute
within themselves.
The minute that the person is not sincere anymore, that's one of the five ingredients. It's not there. He said, I don't want to be a Muslim. He's not. In fact, and now if he wants to go back into Islam, he wants to get his prayers accepted and so on, he's got to make a new shahada. Where the problem comes in is people who go into Islam overtly making a lot of falderal about this thing. Look, I'm a Muslim. And then they go out the same way. Oh, I don't like Islam. I don't want to be a Muslim anymore. Come on, you guys go with me. Well, this is the whole concept now, isn't it? It's the idea of taking other people out, causing other people to doubt that there is a God or that Allah is the one sending Quran, things like this. So there were people who did this, not just to Islam. There were people who tried to do that to the Christians. There were those who came and twisted the message of Jesus, hoping to mess everything up for those people. And then what that does, it caused people to go out. So they couldn't get them out one way, they take them out another way from the inside. So if somebody's working on destroying Islam from the inside, yes, they could easily be put to death, but who by who? Now let's stop. Remember, you have to have proper emirship or a khalifa. And you have to have a hakim, a real judge. It's not a vigilante operation. This is so many times we've said it. Islam is not about vigilantes. None of us could go out and do anything to anybody else. Not even punish them for drinking alcohol or anything. You just cannot do that. Which brings us to another misconception. What about drinking alcohol and they're going to beat me up and I'm trying to get off of it? No, we'd actually help them to get off of the alcohol, cigarettes, or whatever else they're doing. Then we wouldn't be punishing them.
So if someone enters and they still smoke or drink alcohol, is...
Brother, you've got Muslims, born Muslims, smoking, and nobody's doing anything to them. Well, come on. We should be encouraging each other to get away from them because it'll kill you. It's a bad thing. It's definitely a haram, but still, get the balance. That's what I always say, get the balance. But before we wrap up, let's take one more question.
I've seen, if we continue on this subject, I've seen a lot of new Muslims. They believe that every Muslim follows Islam and that every Muslim knows everything about Islam. And whatever he does is Islam.
That's a really good point because people just think because you're a Muslim, you're perfect or you have to be perfect.
Yeah. You yourself were born Muslim. You can answer that one. Is it true that all Muslims know everything
Certainly
about Islam?
Not. Certainly not.
No.
It's a lot of hard work. And
yes, it takes time to learn Islam. And don't just think because he's wearing a kufi on his head or a turban and he has a beard and a long dress on that he knows everything about Islam. Some of the biggest scholars I met, you wouldn't know him from anybody else walking down the street. The real Islam starts on the inside and then you'll see it and observe it in the way people behave. And I wish we had more time on this because I'd like to go into depth. But what I always encourage all the new Muslims, go to the website called convertsreverts.com. That's
convertsreverts.com.
Yeah, it's two words but jammed together. convertsreverts.com. You'll find a whole series of videos of many people telling their story of coming to Islam, problems they face, delights that they found, the good things in Islam, problems with family, things like this. You get it all there. convertsreverts.com.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. We've run out of time, unfortunately. You've been watching Misconceptions with me, Muhammad Hashim, and of course, Yusuf Estes. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
If
you ask me who my prophet is, I will say, haven't you heard? His name is Muhammad. A mercy to the worlds, a mercy to the worlds. If you ask me who my enemy is, I will say, don't you know? If you ask me who my enemy is, he's that same old devil, that same old devil.